Good morning, everybody. This is Michael Collins. I'm the state specialist with Cooperative Extension on family, economic, and family financial issues. And today we're going to be hearing a lunchtime learning topic around Social Security. Before I do that, I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of the series since it's a new fall and we're beginning another year of our briefings here, and also give you some updates on the building bucks and other calls that we had done last year. While I'm doing that, though, I'll remind folks that what I'm going to be talking about today is an issue brief that's posted online. So all the topics for this call series are at a website, fyi.uwex.edu/financial-series. And you'll see there that each month's topic is listed, and then the brief for that topic is posted as well. The briefs are posted as PDF documents, so they should open regardless of what kind of a browser you might have. Generally about 4 pages long, and they provide an overview with some additional links for more information if you want it. These calls are all recorded, so there'll be an MP3 file, which is a audio format for things like iPods or other kinds of players, or even your computer. And those get posted about a week after the call. So today's call is recorded, and you'll be able to, if you speak today on the call, you'll be able to hear yourself if you want to go back and listen to it later. So anyway, the lunchtime learning series is something we've done for the last few years. I haven't counted recently, but we have a couple dozen of these calls that have been recorded in briefs that have gone along with them, dating back to 2009. And in general, we do these about every month or so. They're an hour or less in length. And the idea is to give you some background on a topic that is of interest for educators around the state of Wisconsin. The materials are really designed for you and for your use with your learners. They're not necessarily designed to go direct to the public, although they certainly could be used in that fashion as well. The topics for this series are based on suggestions I get from people like you. So at the beginning of the year, I asked the family financial team, and I think we also solicited some other teams and other colleagues from the state to suggest topics that might be of interest. So you'll see on the Lunchtime Learning website the topics that are lined up for the rest of the year, at least through May of 2013, sort of the academic year, I guess you could think of it that way. And, for example, next month on October 15th, we're going to be looking at financial issues for military families. And for that one, we're going to have a guest speaker who works on a lot of work around counseling and services for military families related to finances. In November, we're going to talk about education finance. In January, we're going to talk about credit reporting and a Check Your Credit Report campaign that I'd like to share with folks and have them think about this as something they could do in their whole communities as well. In February, we'll talk about medical debt, and that's going to be joint with the state health specialist, thinking about how that creates issues for learners and financial education and communities. We'll talk about, in March, behavioral economics, which we've talked about before on these calls, but specific to applying behavioral economics to counseling. And then we'll, in April, talk about issues of financial capability specific to some data that was collected in 2009, and there could be some new data available by then to look at financial capability measures for people in Wisconsin. And then we'll end the academic year, at least, with a topic in May where we talk about summer reading. So we'll talk about a number of different books that are popular in the financial space and that might be worth a summer read, although hopefully your summer read is something fun as well as something educational. And then the other thing I want to mention to folks is last year we had sort of alternated every other month. Lunchtime learning would be 1 month, and then building bucks would be the other month. And if you don't remember building bucks was where expert educators from around the state would talk about a set series of topics that we had developed. So there was a module around budgeting. There was a module around credit. And the idea being that an educator could use these modules to mix and match and build a curriculum as they needed to. We had done 2 rounds of building bucks and sort of shifted the modules to some extent last year based on feedback from three or four educators in every call who presented and reviewed the materials. And we sort of felt like those materials are on the FYI site. It's fyiuwex.edu/buildingbooks. So it didn't make a lot of sense to continue to do that again. I mean, the materials are there. The calls are recorded. So, you know, if you want a refresher on them, they're there. If you didn't hear those calls, or if you're a new educator, you can go to that site and get that information. So rather than using every other month to review those materials yet again, we decided just to do more of the lunchtime learning series, so more topical, sort of hot topics in financial education and financial capability. So that's the structure for this year. Next year we'll revisit again. Maybe we'll bring back Building Bucks if we feel like those items need a refresher, need some freshening up. Or maybe we'll continue with a, you know, more intensive lunchtime learning schedule. So we will see. Any questions about the two series and sort of what functions these all play? All right, great. And so as I mentioned at the outset, your resource for these calls and for Building Bucks is the FYI site. And so it's fyiuwex.edu/financial series. And on that website, you'll find an issue brief called Planning for Retirement, Understanding Social Security Claiming Options. And the brief itself is about 4 pages long. It's a PDF. And what I'm going to do with about the next 30 to 35 minutes is review the topics in that brief. I would welcome folks to stop me if they can get a word in edgewise and ask a question, but then we'll also reserve the last 15 or 20 minutes for questions and discussion as we go along. So there'll certainly be time built in for some of that at the end. I'm particularly interested in your thoughts as educators about the topic of Social Security and claiming, and to the extent this comes up with your learners and in your curriculum, and what sort of resources that you might turn to when you have questions about these topics, or when people come to you with these kinds of issues, what you do. So it'd be great to hear about that too. I also want to remind folks that in 2010 we did do a lunchtime learning on Social Security. It was a little different, and then it was really just designed to be an understanding Social Security briefing. So there's a brief and some materials that you can actually use, PowerPoint presentations and whatnot, if you wanted to do an education session around Social Security, what it is, how it works. So that exists, and some of it's about the history of Social Security and how it's funded and some of the policy issues related to it. Today's call is a little more specific because we really want to talk about claiming, about that point in time when a household or a consumer decides they've paid in and now they want to make a claim and start getting money back, when they want to start getting their payments from Social Security. So that's really the focus of today's call, is that claiming choice, that claiming decision. It turns out to be a complicated one, and one that there's a great deal of academic research around, and a great deal of financial practitioner advice around, and lots of media attention around. So it's one where it's not always clear what the right answer is, and probably one that, well, you only make that choice once, maybe twice, but generally once in your lifetime, that people can have quite a bit of trepidation about, and oftentimes seek lots of information about before they make that particular choice. So that's the goal for today's call, to talk about that topic. Any questions before I get started? Okay, great. So let me just remind folks a little bit about what Social Security is and how it works. And the Social Security system that we think about actually incorporates several different programs, including programs for the disabled, programs for people who might be caring for a dependent with a disability, or a child with particular issues. So there's multiple programs that are run by Social Security. What we want to focus on today is the, you know, basically the retirement benefit, or the old age insurance that's out there, and the decision to begin claiming that particular program. The other programs, SSI, DI, SSI, DI, these are all programs that you're only eligible for in the case of a disability or certain other circumstances. And we could probably do a whole brief around how that process works, how you make a claim, how you justify a claim, what happens when you don't get your claim approved at first and have to do appeals, and there's quite a bit of process to that. By comparison, the retirement benefit is quite simple. It's really a function of your age and how much you've paid into the system in your working years. The key thing to remember about Social Security is that benefit is based on your work record. So every time that you have paid a FICA tax over your career, that has gone into your master beneficiary record, which is maintained by the Social Security administration, and should also be reflected in your tax filings and some other places. But that FICA tax has how much you've paid into the Social Security system, has your earnings each year, and using those numbers, a calculation is made about what your potential benefit is as you get closer to claiming age. The system that Social Security uses has been around quite a long time. So if you've been working since the 1930s, mid-1930s, potentially you have records in the system, and those are what are used for these calculations. So it's the master beneficiary record is a really massive data set that has, every time that you've been paid on the books in a position that paid into the system using FICA taxes. Now, not every position, every job that's out there pays into Social Security. There are public employers that don't take part in the system. There are railroads that don't take part in the system. So there are examples of firms that are not participating in Social Security, but they're pretty few. And for most folks, it is something that they've been doing. The other big exception, besides some employers, particularly public employers that are not in the system, are self-employed people who may not have always reported or paid earned income into the system for the FICA taxes. And so, there are many varieties of this. We'll talk at the end of it about special issues among farmers and farm workers. That may be one example. People who worked a lot for tips or cash and weren't reported, those kinds of situations where there is income, there was earnings, but they weren't subject to FICA. Well, maybe they were subject to FICA, but FICA wasn't paid, let's just leave it at that. So that there might be some work years when people were earning income, but there's no Social Security record for that. And so this becomes important as we think about what the benefit might be that folks are eligible for as they come into the later years. The other thing to recall from sort of the history of how Social Security works, and going back to that call we had back in 2010, is that the work record is based not only on the amount that you might have put into the system, but also the number of years. And so the eligibility for Social Security retirement benefits is based on having 40 quarters or 40 credits of earnings. And today you have to earn about $1,500 in a quarter to have that quarter count towards earnings. And so essentially you have to have about 10 years worth of reported earned income above that threshold, which is pretty low. I mean, we're talking about a threshold of about $6,000 per year right now. And in the past it was lower, but obviously cost of living was lower too, so it sort of all is indexed for that. So for having your 40 quarters is one big thing. And obviously for some people, they might have worked 5 years in their 20s and then been out of the workforce for 10 years and then back in. It doesn't have to be 40 continuous quarters. It just has to be 40 quarters total by the time that you make a claim. And the claims can start as early as you have earned income subject to FICA taxes. So it could be, back to high school that could potentially count. So the master beneficiary record then contains the annual earned income for a person. This is all person level. Sometimes I slip into household, but it's important to remember that Social Security is it's available to individuals, and there are certainly issues of spouses and dependents, but ultimately the beneficiary record is an individual level, not a household level record. So it's a matter of the earnings in and then the number of quarters in which you work. And that's kind of the main drivers of eligibility. The benefit level then is based on a calculation of total funding of the system, how many payments you made, how much you paid in, and then basically a return based on how much you paid in. Now, if you start to earn over about $110,000, there's no more additional FICA taxes collected, so that sort of creates a maximum benefit level, you can think of it that way, because you don't pay in after a certain point in your income. And there's also a mechanism in the system so that people who had very low incomes, who didn't pay very much in, get a sort of base level payment and then an additional amount for their earnings. So essentially there's an element to the Social Security calculation which benefits people who had very low incomes over their working careers or had lower incomes. It gives them a slightly larger monthly payment as a percentage of what they paid into the system relative to people at the higher income levels who would receive slightly less than they paid into the system. It's not a dramatic redistribution, but it certainly is somewhat of a redistribution, and provides, essentially the idea is to provide a benefit that helps keep older people, seniors, out of poverty. And so it has that nature of having a sort of floor to the benefit for people who have worked, who qualify, so that the benefits are enough to keep people just out of poverty or near the poverty line as opposed to far below it. But the big thing, so that's sort of the background on how the system works. And then once you claim, you start getting payments. Beginning in March of next year, those payments will be electronic, either to a bank account or to a prepaid debit card that the Department of Treasury is going to start issuing, or actually has already started issuing. The only exemption for that are people who are age 90 or older. And so most of them have already made their claim, and many have bank accounts. But there are just a handful of exemptions. A handful of exemptions as well for people who are in very isolated areas. But by and large, it's all electronic benefits. So the benefit usually begins a month or two after your month of election. That's sort of the term that Social Security uses. You can start to make your claim as early as a month and a half before your birthday. And many people start calling even before that as they begin thinking about when they're going to claim. Now, one of the things that can be very confusing about even the way the Social Security Administration discusses the claiming process and the benefits on their own website, on their own materials, is that they use the term full retirement age. And there are certain, it seems like there are certain magic ages at which you should claim by, or you get some benefit for claiming by. And it really is a sort of a mislabel of how to think about these kinds of things. Because remember, the longer you work, the more you pay in, the more potentially you could get out. The more quarters, the more dollars that you have put into the system, the more potentially your monthly benefit might be up to a maximum, depending on what your incomes are. But each additional year and each additional earnings is going to add to your potential benefit. And then longer you delay that choice to begin the claim, the larger potentially your payment is. The other thing that's true is that you can claim and still continue to work. So you can be eligible to earn, or eligible for Social Security, and you can still earn your income. So you could, say, work part-time or work full-time and make a claim on your benefits. So it's not necessarily the case that you have to quit and have to start taking Social Security. You can quit and not take it. You can not quit and take it. And there's many different options of what you can do. But for most people, they tend to think of the full retirement age as being 65. So when I get to 65, this is for the current cohort. For those of us who are younger, it's going to be an older age. It's going to be adjusted over time so that the full retirement age will be 66 or 67. But in any case, there's this notion that that's your full retirement age. Once you get to 65 or whatever your full retirement age is, that's the point when you should retire, when you get your full benefit. And that's not necessarily the case. The full benefit is really just a way to think about how do you get something relative to filing earlier, which we sometimes call the early retirement age or early eligibility, which right now is the age of 62. So you can claim at the age of 62, but your benefit obviously will be smaller because you won't have, if, say relative to age 65, you won't have three more years of earnings in the system. Or relative to age 70, you won't have eight more years of earnings in the system. And so the claiming age is really up to you. And I think sometimes there's some confusion that you should claim at 62 or you should claim at 65, but you know, if you claim at 62, you get to retire earlier or, you know, whatever else. But it, the exact claim, the exact year which you claim really is up to you. And it's not like you have to do it at 65 or there's some benefit of doing it at 65 versus 65 and a half versus 66. The longer you wait, the more potentially your benefit amount is each month over time. So that's sort of the biggest thing to remember, is that the longer you wait to claim, the bigger potentially your benefit is. And that means for the rest of your life, your monthly payment is bigger. And if you're going to live to age 95, that means potentially, you know, 20, 25 years of payments at an additional $200 or $300 a month, which could really add up over a lifetime. And there's lots of reasons why people claim early, and we'll talk more about claiming early in a minute. But the ability to wait a little bit longer to claim can have profound effects for somebody as they get into their 80s and 90s, because it means really a much larger benefit in relative terms. Now, the thing to remember about the benefit from Social Security is that it is indexed for inflation. Now, there's some controversy politically right now about what is the right, the correct rate to adjust that payment for. But the payment amount is sort of when you first claim and you get your benefit amount, that's the starting point. And every year, as the cost of living goes up, that payment goes up as well. And so it's essentially an inflation-adjusted annuity that you're buying into. You are getting a fixed payment for the rest of your life that's going to increase with inflation. So it's a real terms is what we think about in economics. It's a real, whatever that amount is real, and it's going to continue with you for your lifetime. If you were to go to the marketplace and try to buy an annuity that would pay you for the rest of your life with, you know, no cutoffs for any particular age and inflation adjusted, it would be quite expensive. So it's quite a valuable benefit if you think about it as if it were an annuity that you would buy in the marketplace. And all you have to do to get a bigger annuity is delay claiming. And, but you know, the cost of delaying claiming, I understand, is not zero. It means you have to continue to work sometimes, or you have to spend down your savings if you stop working. But the return on waiting can be quite large. In fact, waiting from age 62 to age 70 essentially gives you a risk-free guaranteed rate of return of 7 to 8%. So 7 or 8% every year, you're going to get a larger benefit. So your benefits are going to go up 7 or 8% every year that you wait. That's a tremendous, it's almost impossible to come up with any kind of investment opportunity that's risk-free and that provides you that kind of a return on investment. So delaying really has tremendous benefits, as I said, and is something that people really need to think hard about. The ability to work a little bit longer or spending down other assets instead of claiming immediately has, like I said, a really strong effect on people's financial security later in life. Now, I'm making the case here for waiting to claim until you're as old as humanly possible. If you look at the data, if you look at what percentage of people claim at, say, age 70 versus age 65 versus age 62, it turns out most people claim early. Most people claim, you know, it can be up to half or two-thirds will claim very close to their 62nd birthday. They claim as soon as they possibly can. That might be the best decision. It might be that all told, this guaranteed, you know, 8% annual return of waiting isn't worth it for some people. But it's important that people understand what those trade-offs are and what it means to wait, what the costs are of not waiting. The main reasons that it might make sense, though, to claim early would be you just can't work anymore. The biggest issues being health problems. People who work in, jobs that require a lot of physical work may not be able to stick with the workforce for another 5 years or 6 years. It may be that by age 62, they're just kind of worn out, or they've had a illness or they've had an injury, something that keeps them from being able to work longer. And certainly that is a very, very valid reason to claim earlier than age 65 or as early as 62. So there are certainly issues when this comes up. Other people, it may be an issue of that there just isn't work. We've seen a rise in unemployment among people over 50, particularly men over 50. And, if the only other option is working, part-time in retail or something that's paying minimum wage, it may just not make sense to continue to be in the workforce and claiming as the best possible strategy. Or it's a case of they're going to claim, start collecting benefits at age 62 and continue to work part-time to be able to keep their income going. So certainly there are economic reasons and there are health reasons for claiming early. And those are good reasons. And, I think when people understand the trade-offs, they still might make the choice to claim earlier. Another issue to be aware of is that at age 65, regardless of what your
Did somebody just join us?
It's Michael.
Hey, Michael, you got disconnected.
We have had a horrible time with AT&T in our phone system.
Oh.
I apologize.
Okay, you're back on now.
So I didn't realize I was cut off, and I was still talking.
So you finished already, right?
So there's a quiz. Where was I?
You're talking about after your full retirement age, they no longer take Social Security out of your paycheck.
Okay. So I started talking about Medicaid or Medicare. Was anybody with me when I started talking about Medicare? Okay, I'll talk about Medicare. Sorry. So one thing that happens at 65 is Medicare. You become eligible for Medicare. And many companies at that point in time encourage, if not force you to enroll in Medicare. And for Medicare, you actually do pay a premium that you will be responsible for paying. For some people, 65 becomes the trigger point because they have to interact with the Social Security Administration to claim Medicare, and they have to begin making this payment for their Medicare premium. And one way to do that is just to have it deducted from your Social Security benefit. So for some people, 65 tends to be a place where they start to make a claim because of this Medicare trigger. So if 62 is where, a half or two-thirds of people claim, most of the rest claim around 65, and in part because of Medicare. For some people, they have to wait until they can get Medicare because they don't have other insurance coverage. And in retirement, that can be a significant cost if you don't have Medicare. The cost of private insurance, if you retire early, can be very significant. So as a result, very few people wait to age 70 to claim. And so even though there is a strong financial incentive for waiting, we find most people don't. So I guess the next question is if a good rational reason to claim early is a healthcare problem or having some financial struggles, not having enough income, why do so many people claim early? And one of the common things we hear from people who claim early is, I want to get it now because I'm afraid it's going to be gone. If I wait till I'm 65 in the next 3 years, Social Security could go away and I won't get what I've paid in. I won't get what I have coming to me. This is a very widely held myth, and hopefully it's one that you've heard and dispelled, but the idea that Social Security is going broke, meaning that there won't be any money to pay anybody, is just not correct. The worst case scenario is that Congress sits on their hands and does nothing. And then at some point, there won't be enough current payments into FICA to pay out the beneficiary. And it won't be that the whole system then collapses. It'll be that the benefits for everybody gets reduced. And essentially, it depends on where you are and sort of the income distribution. If you're at the very low end, you won't take as much of a cut because, like I said before, there's a certain baseline level to keep people out of poverty. You know, if you're higher income, it'll be a slightly larger cut. But it's around 25%, 23 to 28% that would be cut. So most people are still going to get around, you know, three quarters of every dollar that they were getting before. So it's not a case where the whole system becomes insolvent and you don't get anything. And that won't even happen for another, you know, 15 to 20 years. So it's really not rational to say I'm not going to wait 3 years to try to claim it today. Now, certainly there could be a political reform, and that political reform could do things like changing the benefit levels or changing the cost of living index or changing the age at which you claim. And, you know, some of those are probably, there's probably good policy reasons to do some of those because of the demographic changes in the country and some other things. Generally, though, those wouldn't, you know, they're not going to change the retirement age for people who are age 62 and say, oh, sorry, you have to wait another year. They're going to change the age for people who are currently in their 30s. You know, politically, it's very rare for any of these changes to affect people who are close to retirement age or in retirement. They're generally going to be applying to the next generation of people who are going to be in the system. So, you know, I understand the concern about Social Security. I understand if you read the news and listen to politicians, you think that the system's not even going to last the rest of the year. But, you know, that's not a really good reason to claim early. Another reason that people want to claim at 62 is that they think they might not live to 65. Or they think there's no way they're going to live to age 90. Let alone age 70, and that there's just no way that they're going to live long enough to break even. There's this idea of I can't break even to, you know, make it worth it for me to have waited. And, you know, certainly it's, you know, it's a morbid discussion to have with people, but if people are really not well and they have a history of, you know, in their family, nobody lives past 70, it's certainly possible that is a logical choice to say, is that I'm only going to live 8 years after age 62, so I should take it now because there's no way I'll live long enough to make delaying worthwhile. The problem is that we're not very good judges of how long we're going to live, and most people, if they make an error in guessing how long they're going to live, they err on the side of thinking they're not going to live as long as opposed to living longer. So it's more likely you're going to live longer than you think. And the idea of living to age 90 or 95 might seem really appealing. However, you got to remember, you still have to feed yourself there or pay for people to feed you at that age. And, you know, the benefit of delaying your Social Security benefits and then getting a larger benefit when you're age 90 is really tremendous, because then you'll have gotten, you know, for 15 years a larger payment than you would have otherwise. So it's a significant... there's a significant chance that you're going to live longer than you think, and the benefits of having additional money at that age are pretty significant. So there, you know, there certainly are other benefits too. If you claim later, and you have, even if you do die at the time you think or around the time you think, that means that the benefits for your spouse, the survivor benefits for your spouse, will be larger. So there, you know, there certainly are other reasons to wait, even if you turn out to be a good judge of what your life expectancy is. But if you're surviving in your mid-60s and in pretty good health, the odds that you continuing to live to age 90 are actually pretty good. It's about 1 in 3 chance, or 1 in 4 chance of living that long. All right, so I've made the case here that a lot of people claim too early. Too many people claim too early. What if somebody comes to you and they get to the realization that they've claimed it really, what can they do? Well, there is a way to do it over, basically to pay back the benefits that you got and wait. So if you claimed at age 62, but then at age 64, you realize, gee, I wish I would have waited. You can write a check to Social Security for the amount of benefits that you got and get a do-over. You can claim again at age 65 or 67 or 68 or whenever you think makes more sense. This gets complicated. It used to be easier than it is now, and one of the things that happened is that some savvy people realized this was essentially like a way to get some money at no interest and then, you know, pay it back at no interest and then, you know, basically do it over and get a larger benefit. So they make it a little bit harder than they used to, but it's still very possible. And there are people who claimed too early for, you know, whatever reason that want to change their mind and do this over. And so there are provisions to let you do this, essentially to pay back what you've paid in and start over again. The advantage of doing this is that if you're working in those interim years, say you claimed at 62 but you kept working, you know, you can potentially have enough to pay back all that, boost your overall master beneficiary record with more years of earnings and more earnings. And when you finally do claim, you've got an even larger benefit amount. So that would be one reason for people to do that, and one of the common ones that we see people. Sometimes people do this when they realize how much they have in their pension or in their 401k or those kinds of things, too. They might look at it and say, you know, I could actually do pretty well by not working, but using my other funds I have, paying back my Social Security amount, and, you know, delaying my claim there. So those are all potential reasons to delay and wait. So I talked a little bit about spouses before, but it is important to remember that the old age insurance does have a provision in it to support spouses as well. So as a spouse, you can claim on the record of your spouse. You can claim on your own record. And, you know, typically you want to pick the one that gives you the larger benefit. So in some cases, a spouse might have worked in a low-wage sector, but enough to get his or her 40 quarters in. And then the other spouse worked in a higher wage sector and has a much larger potential benefit amount. And so the spouse claims on the beneficiary who has the larger benefit amount. And so, you know, you can think of somebody who, you know, a housewife who worked intermittently but still had 40 quarters, worked in a childcare, lower wage position. A husband maybe worked in manufacturing and had higher wages for a long time. She might not want to claim on her record, but instead claim on his record because that gives her a larger benefit amount. There are lots of complexities with spouses, as we all know, but particularly with Social Security. So a simple one is, you know, one spouse has a larger amount than the other, and so deciding whose record to claim on. Sometimes spouses have near the same earnings, and so, you know, you really have to think about which one makes more sense to claim on. It's also important to remember that whichever spouse survives, the other spouse could get a widow or widower's benefit, a survivor's benefit, which is generally about half of the benefit that the deceased spouse was receiving. So that's an issue that spouses have to think about. The other complexity is that Social Security was designed such that the spousal benefit really... And the idea was to recognize the fact that, you know, in the 30s and 40s and 50s, when the program was designed, that spouse, mostly women at that point in time because of the way the labor force was, helped create a situation where the male or the other spouse could earn income. They were performing work at home. They were doing everything that it took to keep a household going so that he could work and earn money. And, you know, the idea is that then that spouse contributed essentially to the master beneficiary record. They just didn't get credit for it because they weren't paying on the FICA tax, but the household really existed because of their efforts, their labor. And as a result, there's a provision in the old age survivor's benefits that even if the spouses are separated or divorced, the spouse can claim on her ex-husband or ex-wife's record. So if you were married for at least 10 years, you can claim on your ex's record if it's to your advantage. Now, this can get very complicated because, you know, there's some issue of coordination around claiming and those kinds of things that might become complicated. And, you know, of course, there are oftentimes other animosities in the case of a divorce where a spouse might intentionally claim or not claim in order to make it worse for the other party. So it can get a little bit hairy. The other thing is that for people who had multiple long-term marriages, there might be multiple spouses, and the claiming there can get complicated. These are the kinds of things that really require more of an expert who's familiar with the law, and, you know, oftentimes it involves not just Social Security law, but also marital law in various states. So these are more complicated cases, but, you know, certainly spouses are something to think about. For most people, it's an issue of which record gives the better benefits, and then also, you know, to what extent the spousal benefit for widow or widower might be something to consider. So moving on from the issue of spouses, there's the issue of continuing to work in retirement. Oftentimes, you will hear in the popular press this discussed as a tax. If you continue to work, you're somehow taxed for your additional earnings, so you get a reduction in your benefits once you reach this currently it's a $14,640 threshold. That's really not the right way to think of it. It's not so much a tax, but your earnings are going to be added to your master beneficiary record. So what will happen essentially is that Social Security will recalculate your benefits and give you a larger benefit in the future. So while it's true you won't be able to get as much in your check every month from Social Security, you will be able to essentially get a larger check later. So the work penalty, so to speak, in retirement isn't quite as large as perhaps sometimes people talk about it to be. So the last thing I want to talk about just briefly is some of the issues for farm families that come up. Farm families and really anybody who's self-employed, the Social Security claiming can be quite complicated. Oftentimes there's a combination of this self-employment or farm income, some of which, I mean, earnings in a farm situation or a self-employment situation are always tricky because, yes, there is money coming in, but there's also a lot of money going out for expenses and for equipment and those kinds of things. And so the amount of formal income that's reported as earnings on which FICA is calculated might be quite low, and that money that earnings which wasn't reported is tied up in assets as a result of the business. But it's also true that in farm families, one or both spouses may have worked off of the farm, and so there may have been earned income in other sectors in addition to the farm income. And the other complexity is that, you know, retirement, if you put your air quotes around retirement, for farm families is really nebulous. I mean, oftentimes people continue to work on the property or on the operation, you know, well into their 60s, and even though they may be full retirement age. And so this whole issue of claiming, how to claim, claiming on the spouse's record, sometimes it does make sense to claim on a spouse's record. So it can get pretty complicated. There is a, Social Security has a brochure specific to farmers and farm workers. It's a little bit dated, but it's still accurate. So there's one called If You're a Farm Worker, and the other one's for farmers, growers, and crew leaders. So the links are in the brief. But for many families who have these kind of complicated combinations of self-employment and formal workforce and, you know, other kinds of situations, it does make sense to talk to a counselor at Social Security. There are many Social Security offices around the state with staff that can be quite helpful for many of the cities around the state. There's also a 1-800 number, which is in the brief, and there's information online. Social Security actually has a pretty good website that's worth taking a look at. The other group I mentioned earlier, which are people who are railroad workers or public workers who haven't paid into Social Security, it's pretty rare that both spouses never paid into Social Security, particularly in Wisconsin, but there are some states that still don't take part in Social Security, and maybe if both spouses were part of it, then they're just in their the system that the state provides for them and are not in Social Security. But more often it's a mix between people who are getting Social Security and some other kinds of system. And again, this is a place where it's good to talk to somebody, to talk through some of the details because of the complexities that are involved. I'm going to stop here in a minute so we can have at least some conversation. I apologize about our delay from the disconnection. There is a link here for the Social Security earning statement. So it used to be you got Social Security earning statement every year in the mail. It was a green two, you know, four-page sort of folded document that you could get a hold of. They've done away with those for budget reasons. But you can still go online and look up your master beneficiary record and get a calculation of what your estimated amount would be at different claiming ages. And so that's a tool that's online. It's pretty easy to use. You're essentially entering in your Social Security number and a few other pieces of information, and it gives you an estimate of what your benefits would be like. And I think one of the things that we need to work with consumers more on is understanding that now that you don't get that statement, you still can get that information really as often as you want to look at that and do some what-if scenarios. Some of the other resources that are listed here, the links that are here, are some great resources from Boston College. They have a Retirement Research Center, which has really been at the forefront of producing good information around claiming strategies and understanding how the system works. And there's also some nice calculators, including one for Social Security, that looks at what potential benefits would be for different claiming ages and how those can work over time. So I'll stop there, and if people have both questions, and then, you know, again, I'd really like to hear from you all where you send people or what information you found most useful.
Michael, you talked about all of the options. Can you actually make an appointment with your local Social Security Administration office and sit down and have them go through those options with you?
You can. I'll say a couple things about that, however. So you can. They strongly encourage you to try to do some or as much as you can online first. And you can also get, you know, you can get faster service on the phone. But they absolutely do have counselors who are available to talk through the options. They, you know, their preference is always to work with people who have complicated issues over simple issues, but they will see anybody. And they, you know, they're generally scheduling a couple weeks out for those kinds of things. For a long time, there was actually a bonus structure so that, the agent actually got a small financial benefit for every case claim that it processed that resulted in benefits being filed. So there was a concern for a long time that one of the reasons why everybody retired at 62 is because they talked to their Social Security counselor, and the Social Security counselor had this internal reason for encouraging you to retire early, even if you weren't in a situation where that was the best choice. So I think that's mostly been done away with, but it is something to be cautious about.
Michael, is there a way that grandparents raising grandchildren can get dependent benefits, or have they done away with dependent benefits?
No, that's a really good question. I think maybe in a previous draft we even had some discussion about dependents and just got too complicated. But yes, if you're of claiming age and you have a dependent under age 18 or a dependent who has a disability, you know, of various kinds, you can potentially get an additional payment for that dependent. And the key for a grandparent is that they would be the guardian, and they, you know, essentially the child would be their dependent. And there are various ways to show that dependency. And, you know, the idea is that it is to support cost of living and education, primarily for the dependent. Does anybody have any thoughts about when people come to you with questions about Social Security, what are some good resources to point them to other than the local office?
Sometimes I refer them to the benefit specialist with the ARDC.
That's exactly what I was going to say in our county, too. If depending on the question or the issue that comes up, a lot of times we'll walk them down the hall and introduce them to the benefits specialists at our Aging and Disability Resource Center.
Well, there are a lot of resources online. You know, I particularly would recommend the Boston College resources. They've done a really good job of creating information that's very accessible. They have a about a 40-page booklet on Social Security claiming that is available at no or low cost, and as well as an online version of that. And then they also have some calculators that are quite good.
Sometimes the online resources can scare off some of the people who aren't real computer literate.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the only way to get the benefit statement now.
Yep.
So that's, you know, I know that's an issue. Librarians, for example, have become much more knowledgeable about that particular statement because people go to libraries to get their beneficiary statement. But most of the Boston College stuff, other than the calculators, is a PDF that can be printed. I mean, that's certainly an option. You can print it in hand for people. Other questions or feedback on what would be useful for helping your learners understand more about the system and particularly the claiming decision?
It just seems like there would be some value in doing some education around the claiming later and the advantages of doing that. I know lots of people who get really, really eager, but if you really look at the dollars and cents of it, it makes sense to wait for a lot of individuals.
Yeah, it is very hard for me to suggest to you any investment that could possibly give you anything close to this kind of a benefit. Unless you really can't continue to work, delaying is financially tremendously beneficial. Do folks often see people in education around that 62 age? I mean, would there be an opportunity to try to influence this decision, or do you feel like mostly you see people after they've already claimed, or you know, long before that, before they're even thinking about it? Or is this an issue that you just don't see? All right, I think with that, we'll just wrap it up. People are quiet today. So just a reminder again, the next one of these calls is going to be on the issue of finances for military families. And so we'll have a guest who's going to share some resources and information specific to Wisconsin around financial issues for military families. If you're not familiar with the topic, the issues that both families face while a service member is in country, they're out of the country, what that can present for a family, as well as even issues for service families who are in country and, say, mobile or oftentimes facing particular struggles around access to credit and income, those kinds of things, are growing. So here's some information about resources that are available. So thanks very much. The next call then is October 15th, and I'll see you all then.